This morning, what I'd like to do is, I know everyone's dying to know what's in the new standard, what it looks like, but what I want to do is actually take a couple of steps backwards and talk about the background to why we have records management standards in New South Wales government, the drivers for the review of the standards this year, because I think they're quite interesting, the reasons why we did what we did, the actual review process and the basis for the development of the new standard, and then whilst we won't have a new standard until next year, I'm going to take you through what's in the standard, what are the new requirements that you'll need to be thinking about once that standard is actually launched. So that's where we're going this morning. Okay, under the State Records Act, which most of you know very well, we have a defined role to approve standards and codes of best practice for use across the New South Wales public sector. The Act defines records management quite comprehensively as all aspects of the making, keeping and disposal of records. And as part of the requirements in the Act, we are required to consult on proposed standards and codes of best practice, to submit these to the board of the State Records Authority for approval before they are actually issued for use in the public sector. And we're also required to keep these standards and codes of best practice under review. So in other words, once they're issued, it's not a static process. We need to actually engage in a review process. This is a listing of what we actually currently have as standards for New South Wales public sector and the one code of best practice. Now, we've been in the business of developing standards since 1996. We're up to the second generation for some of these standards, and we obviously have standards on a range of topics. Each of these standards establishes minimum requirements for effective records management. The standards are mandatory, they're measurable, and they include minimum compliance requirements. They're designed to be outcomes oriented rather than prescriptive. And for us, that's an incredibly important design criteria because we're actually writing standards for a very wide and diverse public sector. So the standards are applicable to government agencies, departments, and authorities. They're applicable to the public health system, the local health districts. They're applicable to the councils and the universities. So a wide range of organisations, which range in size. The smallest public entity is about 10 people through to tens of thousands. So in other words, we're talking very big organisations down to the tiniest of organisations who need to be able to get a handle on these standards. The standards that we issue are used obviously for implementing records management practices in organisations, but they're also used in monitoring activities. So for instance, in your internal audit processes. They're also used by us at State Records when we're assessing the record keeping practices or processes of a public office. Now, as I mentioned before, there's just one code of best practice, and that's the international standard. The codes of best practice are a little different to, obviously, a state record standard because they're where we have identified and codified something that we believe is best practice and bringing that into, obviously, the radar of the public sector. So they're used as benchmarks, which you can use to measure your practices and systems against. They're not designed normally for a formal auditing framework. Nonetheless, failure to comply with a code of best practice could actually leave you open to criticism about a failure of record keeping. So that's basically the landscape as we know it at this point in time. Now, as you all know, we've been reviewing this landscape this year. So what I'd like to do is actually look at the why we have been reviewing. Firstly, many of the standards that we have on that landscape were issued 10 years ago or even earlier than that, which means they potentially don't reflect current practices or processes, nor the priorities of the current government as well as they should. We also had concerns that some of our standards didn't actually assist you or assist your organisations in coming to terms with the digital records and information management environment that we're all now being challenged by. So that's a very important priority for us in looking at standards. We also looked at the issues which have been raised in the 2013 monitoring survey, which was primarily a survey around the standard on digital record keeping. And we found that there were some very major issues occurring in how organisations were actually implementing that standard and whether or not they're actually able to develop good practices and processes around digital record keeping. So just to remind you, the top four issues we found in the 2013 survey were, firstly, public officers weren't identifying the records that they needed to support high-risk, high-value business processes, so therefore we weren't sure that there was the assurity that organisations would have the necessary digital records they needed to support this incredibly critical aspect of business. The second major issue was that record-keeping functionality wasn't actually being incorporated into the design and procurement process for new business systems. Thirdly, that organisations were not planning nor undertaking the disposal of digital records, including the disposal of records and information in their business systems. And the last major issue was that organisations weren't planning for the migration of digital records or the ongoing accessibility to digital records to meet their ongoing business and accountability needs. With those four major issues out there, we basically were saying, well, we don't think the standard on digital record keeping actually supports public officers dealing with these particular issues sufficiently well, and we need to actually overhaul this standard to address these issues. And the last two points on that overhead, I won't go into any depth because Sonia has covered those. Part of the broader landscape in New South Wales government is the information management framework and the digital transformation that's occurring. And we believe it's important that state records standards harmonise with these and that our standards have a more integrated approach to managing records and information. What have we done in reviewing the standards? Most of you will have only seen part of these processes. This is what has happened behind the scenes over the last 8 months. Basically, our standards have developed over a period of time in response to particular issues or needs that we have identified in the public sector. So they've developed in an ad hoc process. We produced a standard in 2002, the next one was in 2004, etc. This year provided us an opportunity to actually review five of these six standards at the same time, so to take a much more holistic approach to the review rather than just look at one or two standards in isolation without seeing the connectivity between those standards. So we've reviewed the standard on full and accurate records, the standard on managing a records management program, the standard on digital record keeping, the standard on appraisal and disposal of state records, and the standard on counter disaster strategies for records and record keeping systems. We did exclude one standard from the holistic review, and that was the standard on physical storage because it had been reviewed in 2012, and it also is a very standalone kind of standard because it's really, at the end of the day, about physical storage. So it was excluded from the review process. So what we did was, okay, we're going to review five standards. So we sat down and we looked at these standards and we thought about where we are currently in practice, the current environment for records management, and where did we want to go? Where did we want to help you go in the changing and challenging environments that we work in? The world we work in is far more integrated with information management than it has ever been before. It's much more business oriented, and it's much more connected with the business of the organisation. And adding to that the ever-changing technology, we have lots of issues and challenges which need to be addressed in a roadmap, which is what the standards actually provide us. So the standards we have are, in most cases, our second generation of standards. So we were really thinking about, well, where do we want to go for the third generation? We did a lot of consultation with you, the public officers, and you may have remembered there was a lot of surveys out there where you could provide us with your feedback, tell us what you liked, what you didn't like, and a lot of organisations took us up at that opportunity and provided very detailed feedback about, in some cases, all five standards, some did a couple of the standards, so we got a lot of feedback from nearly 100 organisations, which was fantastic. We also got feedback from our Digital Records Advisory Group. Now, this feedback basically confirmed our views and also provided some extra insights into how public sector organisations were using the standards, what they thought about where the standards should go. So, in summary, most organisations were supportive of the standards. many organisations had implemented them fully or in most part. There was support for a single standard. Don't give us five new standards, give us one new standard. Many organisations noted the duplication of requirements across several standards and the difficulties that this presented to them in implementing and measuring conformity with the standards. In other words, if I have to measure it in this standard, I also have to measure it over here, but it's just slightly different because the difference in age of the two standards and I'm not sure what I'm looking for, so can you make this easier for me? There was requests to streamline the requirements to make the standards easier to implement. There was requests for better connections with the standards and the new ICT strategy and the information management framework. How do these things all fit together? Can you make it easier for me to understand the connections between all these things? Naturally, people told us that the counter disaster strategy standard was out of date, which was something we went, yep, tick, we agree with you. And there were requests for us to use less jargon, use plain English, make it more applicable to a wider audience. In other words, make this standard easier for me to actually explain to senior management what we actually have to do. So taking on board all of that feedback, we sat down and went, okay, well, where do we go? What's the basis for the next standard that we do? So naturally we went, okay, they like one standard, we're going to do one standard, not five. We're going to make sure that the next standard supports both the physical and the digital records and also supports digital records and information management as governments transitioning into fully digital operations. So in other words, making sure that we actually support you as we make this transition. Making sure that good information practices in complex business and information environments is addressed in the standards. So in other words, the world that we actually work in, which is very complex, with a range of different environments out there. We also wanted to build on the strong foundation that we already had, so using the first and second generation of standards to build the third generation. And we heard you, we wanted to consolidate and streamline requirements as much as possible, make it easier to implement. So through consolidating and streamlining requirements, we're able to remove duplication or the overlaps that existed between the five standards. We reduced the number of minimum compliance requirements, you'd be very pleased to know, from 61 to 21. We've cut the red tape. This reduction in requirements, I must say, is not a dumbing down of requirements, but it's really been a refocusing of requirements to those that really matter the most to make the outcomes that we want to achieve. It's prioritising the things that need our collective attention to ensure that we transition well into a fully digital operation and bring our records and information management along with us. So it's all about what do we actually need rather than chapter and verse in the requirements. So we've really scoped them down. I'd like to take a brief moment here to acknowledge the work of the entire government record keeping program. So Peter and Emma and Amanda and Perry and Angela, and I was about to mention our former colleague Kate, who's sitting up the back, because everyone has contributed to the development of this standard. So and everyone has supported me as we've gone along this process. So thank you to all of you. It's a group effort. Putting all that together, we sent out a draft to everyone for consultation, and that went out to you in August, September. Based on your feedback, we revised it up into the final version, and that was submitted to our board in October, and they approved it, which was very nice of them. Now, we're going to be launching the new standard in March next year. We're not going to launch it to you as a Christmas present. We're going to give you an opportunity to think about it, but also to give us an opportunity to get ready for the launch of this particular new standard. And the reason is we want to actually do a lot of work on implementation guidance for you so that when this standard comes out, the transition from five standards to one hopefully will be a much easier process. And doing that right before Christmas was just not going to be a lot of fun for all of us. So there's a delay in the start. So what is in the new standard? The principles, there are three principles only. It's structured very much around a high-level statement, some explanatory text, a range of minimum compliance requirements, and we've included examples of how an organisation can demonstrate compliance with that requirement. Now, I must stress the examples are merely suggestions. They're not a definitive list, so you don't just work through the examples and go tick, 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 yep, done it, therefore I've met the requirement. There may be other ways you could meet that requirement in your organisation. There may be new ways that we haven't actually included in that list of examples, which over the course of time we'll all come to include. So please don't use those examples as the definitive list of the things I have to do. Now, the first principle is organisations take responsibility for records and information management. This is about establishing appropriate governance frameworks in the organisation. Most of the requirements in this particular principle draw very much on the Standard on Managing a Records Management Program and aspects of the Standard on Full and Accurate. Six of the eight minimum compliance requirements for this principle draw on those earlier standards. There are only two new requirements, and that's about extending the responsibilities for records and information management out to the business owners and the business units in our organisation, because they're managing the systems, they own the systems. And the second new requirement is about ensuring that records and information management responsibilities are identified and addressed in the outsourcing, cloud or other service arrangements that we enter into as part of our new technological environment. So those are the only two new requirements. Principle two, records and information management support business. This is about taking a planned approach to records and information management. It's about undertaking assessments of records and information needs so that the organisation knows what its key business information is. What is its high risk, high value information? How best do we protect that in the systems we design? So using that assessment to actually incorporate into system specifications, into protection measures, etc. It's also about considering all the operating environments that the organisation has dipped its fingers into, so that records and information that are needed to support business, no matter where they are actually part of the visibility of what you do. They're part of the visibility of the organisation. So instead of having, well, I only look after the EDRMS and all of this happens, all of that happens over there and I have no involvement in it, we're actually trying to cast a visibility of all those different repositories of information around your organisation to ensure that they're all being consistently managed and that the records and information are there when they're required. Now, this particular principle draws on the Standard on Digital Record Keeping, on Full and Accurate Records, and also the Appraisal and Disposal of State Records. There are three new requirements in this, and that's about prioritising and ensuring that high risk and high value areas of business and systems and records and information needed to support this business are identified. So in other words, we know what needs to be managed because it's the most critical of the information resources in our organisation. The second requirement is the by design requirement, and this is about ensuring that records and information management is a design component of all systems and service environments, particularly where high risk, high value business is being undertaken. And the third one is about ensuring, yes, that we have that visibility across all the environments within our organisation. In other words, we know where all our records assets are, our information assets, we know where they are, we know how they're being managed, and if we need to, we know where to find them. Now, the third principle is records and information are well managed. This is about just ensuring effective management of records and information. It's about ensuring that whatever we do underpins trustworthy, useful and accountable records and information, ensuring that this records and information are available for as long as we need to keep them, and that it extends to all environments, all formats and all types of systems. This particular requirement builds obviously on the Records Management Program standards, Full and Accurate Records, and also Part 6 of the State Records Act. It only has one new requirement in it, and that's about ensuring that records are kept for as long as they are needed for business, legal and accountability requirements. So as you can see, we're building on what we already have and adding a few extra bits to it. The other thing I would say is that whilst it builds on these earlier requirements, we have tweaked the wording just a little bit to bring it up to date. So you need to look at those requirements and make sure your documentation actually fits the new emphasis in the new requirements. So this is how we think the standard will help you. Basically, it's going to be a tool which will support information assets and resources across the entire organisation. It's not just going to be about the EDRMS within the purview of the records unit. It's about managing all the records and information resources out there across our organisation. We think that it's going to increase the visibility of information assets across the organisation, regardless of the system that they're stored in, the storage location that they may be in. So it is a standard for both physical and digital, but obviously it has a huge emphasis on the digital. We think it's also going to promote collaboration with ICT. It's bringing you to the table to talk about the things that are important in managing records and information in a digital environment. And as Sonia was alluding to, we think senior management's going to be quite interested in it as well, because it's about how do we actually make these things happen. So we're hoping that it's going to be extremely helpful for you. So what's next? The standard will be launched in early March next year, and we will contact all of you about that. Everyone will receive emails, and there'll be lots of information up on the website. The delay, as I mentioned before, is about enabling us to prepare a range of materials for you to assist you with implementing the new standard. We're going to have an implementation guide and topic-specific guidance available as part of the launch. The implementation guide will actually provide an explanation of each of the requirements in the standard. What does it actually mean? Where do you go to on the website or in other websites to find information on further information on how to implement it? So we're trying to give you as much as we possibly can right from the word go. There's also going to be a range of mappings. When we issued the draft standard, there were mappings from the old standard to the new. We're doing more of that and doing mappings from the new standard to the old standard. So in other words, you can actually navigate through what you've already done, whether you can actually tick, yep, done that, move on to the next bit. We're going to implement the requirements in two phases. So anything that's mapped to an existing requirement in a current standard now will commence when the standard commences in March next year. Those six new requirements will come into play from December next year. So there's a nice long lead in to get ready for those. Your organisation, as the requirements build on those existing requirements, we're hoping that the transition is actually going to be fairly straightforward for most organisations. But as I mentioned before, you do need to check your documentation to make sure it actually meets the new nuanced requirements. Now, for organisations that don't currently meet requirements in the current standards, then there is going to be a little bit more work, because obviously you'll be moving into that new standard straight away and actually looking at whether or not you meet an existing requirement. I would suggest for most organisations just looking at how you actually match up against those minimum compliance requirements now, and obviously identifying any work that you think or any gaps that you think are likely to cause issues once those new requirements actually start. So that's basically all I wanted to say about this new standard. But